Welcome to Have a Drink With Me. I'm your host, Dylan Polniak, and joining me today is singer, songwriter from the classic Crime and Vocal Few, Matt McDonald. Welcome to the show.
That's a good Scottish accent, man. Good job. The ancestors would be proud. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you on here. And to go with the Scottish accent that I butchered, we are having a Scottish drink of scotch.
Exactly. Yeah. No, when you first asked me to do this, it had been, a couple weeks into my my kind of fitness challenge that I did with Frank, mm-hmm. where we didn't drink. It was like Sober October, but it was even longer. It was like Sober October and most of November. And yeah. And so I figured, the name of the show is Have a Drink With Me, and I better be having a drink if I'm on. So we've postponed it.
Yeah.
The first drink back is always going to be scotch because that's my heritage. So
yeah. And we are both drinking them out of mason jars.
Yeah.
You have a different reason for drinking it out of a mason jar.
Yeah. I walk to work. It takes me about 15 minutes to walk. And I realized I wasn't going to be at home for this interview. So I was going to stay at work. And so I brought the drink with me in a little a ball jar. I think my wife pickles things in this jar. So.
Oh yeah. I'm drinking out of Kerr. So it's either Ball or Kerr. I think those are the only Germans, two mason jar companies. Yeah. Well, hey. Cheers.
Cheers to you. What kind of scotch do you got?
I've got Dewar's.
Dewar's. Okay.
Now, I think it's Irish. The only scotch.
Isn't that an Irish?
It's from Perthshire, Scotland.
Oh, goodness. What do I know about anything?
Yeah. And it's the only whiskey. It's the only scotch I think I've ever seen sold in stores, too.
Really?
Yeah. I went to Circus Liquor here in LA and they're couldn't not find scotch? Like any scotch.
Okay, they would have Glenlivet. Everybody has Glenlivet.
Oh yeah, they had Glenlivet.
Right, 12 years.
I'm not looking to drop $60 on.
Right,
that.
Right. Scotch is a little more expensive. Yeah. This is an Arbalore. I don't know how to say it. Cask conditioned 12-year scotch that my wife bought me for my birthday, and I'm really, really proud of myself for not having finished it yet because my birthday is in May. And normally when I get the nice scotch, it's gone fast, but I've been spreading this one out. So probably the 2 months off drinking helped.
Yeah, for sure. So with scotch, do you remember your first experience with it?
Gosh, what is that even? Yeah. I mean, the first,
cause it's such an interesting drink to get into.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, everyone who starts drinking is probably some shitty vodka, some shitty whiskey, and then you kind of move into bourbon. And then when you first have scotch, it's like, this is new.
Yeah. Like I would have had Glenlivet or whatever on an airplane, but I remember a very distinct memory I have is I was on tour when I was on my 23rd birthday. We were on tour with MXPX, punk band from Seattle, and they were a little bit older than us. And so on my birthday, they took me out for a drink, and Tom Wisniewski from the band, he's a guitar player, bought me a drink of Lagavulin 12-year scotch. Ooh. Which was the first time I ever like really tasted smoky, peaty, powerful vegetable scotch, mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, wow, that's like, that tastes expensive and that seems cool, but that's like, I wasn't like immediately gonna go drink scotch after that. I was like, well, that was nice, thanks for the drink.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. My first experience with it is I was getting my headshots done.
Nice.
And the photographer said, do you want a drink by the time we were done? And I said, sure. And then I tried it and I was kind of thrown off by it because mm-hmm. I'm not used to that smoky taste. And then I don't think I had it for another 6 years.
Yeah.
I don't think I touched scotch for another 6 years, but it's one of those things where if you get the opportunity to have it, it's like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
Cause it's like more of a celebratory,
right.
Kind of whiskey.
Years later, this is the time where it really got me. Cause I could drink it on and off or whatever, but like my friend is part of this whiskey club, which basically means they elect, a librarian who is essentially the treasurer, and everybody pays him, and then they vote every once a quarter on what bottles they're going to buy, and then they meet once a quarter mm-hmm. and they just taste all the different whiskeys. And it's it was amazing. I think I paid $25 and I got to taste like, you know, 40 whiskeys. And, oh, wow. And some of the ones they had, like, I remember the first time I ever tasted Highland Park, 18 year. And then a number of the Japanese whiskeys that are really good. It was mind blowing. It was one of those things where it's like, I didn't know that you could have, an experience like this that was so pleasurable with like a liquor, you know?
Yeah.
Like a flavor, just the amount of flavor, what it did to your mood. And not, I don't mean like getting drunk. It was like way, way before that. It was just the taste. So that's when I really kind of fell in love with whiskey, or at least good whiskey.
That's like a classier way of saying I'm doing a bunch of shots.
Exactly.
Or doing like a whiskey taste.
Like everybody gets this little snifter glass and you take like a little splash and then you drop some water into it to like open it up. Like you're supposed to add water because all this stuff is like cask conditioned and mm-hmm. you know, it's really concentrated. And the water, you add a drop and you taste it and it tastes different. Then you add a drop and it opens it up more. So it's this real, it's really kind of this highfalutin, you know, bourgeois way of drinking. But it, you know, it's like once you go fine dining and you have that like really incredible meal, you don't really understand why people would pay, you know, $100 for a plate.
Oh, yeah.
And then once you do it and it hits on all those notes, you're like, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. Like that's not just food or that's not just drink. That's art. You know?
Yeah. That's the difference between, going to go eat a burger versus I'm going to have a nice steak. I mean, they're both beef,
right?
But it's
one's ground.
Huge difference between,
one's ground chuck and one's like filet mignon.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's great. So with scotch, is that your kind of your go-to drink or is it really just a occasional like drink?
Yeah. It's completely occasional. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I drink too fast as it is being Scottish, that if I drank scotch all the time, I would just be a useless drunk, I think. So usually it's like beer or wine, you know, with my wife, you know, after the kids go to bed or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. Scotch, maybe when there's guests or something, you know, something a little fancy.
So an event,
basically. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I'm a vodka Red Bull. I think I'm just a vodka Red Bull all the time, unless a guest on the show tells me to drink something different.
Crossfaded. That's great. I used to do those touchdowns. That's where they drop a shot of vodka in Red Bull.
Oh, wow.
That they call that a touchdown. It's a bro drink.
Yeah. It's interesting with the whole bro drink thing. You know, we're having scotch, which is nice and whatever, but sometimes it's just great to have a Jägerbomb.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know what? I like a nice ice cold Miller Lite.
Ooh,
I like that. And that's a bro drink too, but like there's nothing, you can't beat it in a can on a hot day after mowing the lawn. You just can't beat it, I think.
Yeah. My wife's Coors Light.
Coors Light. There you go. I mean, same.
Yep.
But like, yeah, like a light American lager. It has its place on the road. That's usually what we drink. You know, that's usually what the beer that we get is the, you know, because you got to hydrate. So got to keep.
Oh, yeah, voice, for sure.
That voice.
There's a lot of water in there too. Yeah.
Mostly. Yeah.
So speaking of being on the road, we met February of this year.
Mm-hmm.
You guys played your last tour of the year.
Yeah, probably one of the last shows played in that venue.
Yeah,
before everything closed down.
Yeah, Chain Reaction in Anaheim. So last week's episode will have been the Dan Dobie episode, and we talk about our experience going and seeing you guys live at Chain Reaction and what it's like being at like a punk show where you really just get like a beer or you do shots and stuff. It's not a grab a nice Dewar's or Glenfiddich and listen
and
get something that's going to spill.
Right. Yeah. And a Chain Reaction. There's no alcohol cause it's all ages. So, so it's kind of the bummer about that venue, but I guess it's great. It's been open for years for people who are underage. So it's good to have a place to go, but yeah, totally. The venue lifestyle is definitely not the fine dining or fine drinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was such a great experience. You guys, you know, I was there with Dan and I met you all for the first time and you guys were happy to have me on the tour van. I don't want to say tour van, but it's more of an RV.
It was
it's
an RV. Yeah. Totally.
Personal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your personal RV. And, you know, you guys were just relaxing, playing this, you know, simple game and, and just having fun. And it was great seeing that and seeing that you guys were just kind of doing things together. No one else was really on the RV, and you guys were just having fun, relaxing, and you guys have this, you guys were all very sweet and nice to me. And we had a great conversation about touring. We had conversation about everyone's family, and everyone was so excited about creating the music. Everyone was so excited about going home after. It was just a very different experience meeting a band that's not raging and trying to destroy your RV. Obviously it's your personal RV, but right. But you guys had feels like you guys have a really good lifestyle when you're on tour. and now you guys are no longer on tour.
Yes.
And so now you've got new hobbies because of that.
Yeah. I know. I'm just laughing at you saying that I have a good lifestyle, or we have a good lifestyle on tour. Cause I always think of tour as like the most detrimental part of my life as far as like for my health, you know, as far as the food that I eat and the amount that I drink. It's just always just way too much. And yeah, probably 10 years ago, we would have been, you know, raging more and, you know, messing up hotel rooms and stuff like that. And now we're, you know, in our 30s and we have kids and stuff, and it's never that, but it's still never good. Like I always have to like, you know, reset after I come home from tour.
Yeah.
So, you know, cause it's just like, it's every night. It's like Monday is Friday, you know, Tuesday's Friday, every night's Friday.
Yeah.
So, and you have to get up, you know, people, you know, a few hundred people show up and that's the highlight of their week. And they're out to have a good time, and you have to get on their level, you know, like if you're throwing the party, if you're doing the show, you have to get up and get on their level at least so that you can lead the event, you know? And so that's what's the hard part about touring is that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's like, okay, you know, 2 p.m. rolls around and it's like beer time.
Yeah. Well, what I was getting at with that is, you know, I saw you guys kind of also with what you're saying, switch it on and off. You know, I hung out with you guys before you went on, and you guys were all just relaxed, ready for your show, ready to perform. And then you guys just go nuts on stage. You guys were so good, such an amazing, lively performance. And then we go back, and I mean, I've gone on tour with bands and I've been on tour buses and that kind of stuff. And we go back, and you guys are talking about side businesses and photography for wedding and, you know, your family and just, you know, just sipping drinks and essentially playing cards. And that was such a interesting thing to see. You guys were just like, you did your thing, and maybe you guys were ready to go home and maybe that was the end of it. But it was interesting seeing a band just, you go back with your close people and you just relax and you guys did your thing. And now it's time to just, let's lose some ones and just kind of calm down.
Yeah, so. It's kind of like, you know, I think maybe I might be going out on a limb to say this, but I think the archetypal mode that being a band dude follows, at least like anthropologically throughout history of humankind, is that it's sort of like the warrior. It's like we gear up, we make our plans, we do our sound check, we do the battle. That's like the show, you know, that's where all the aggression and energy comes out. And then after that, we sit around the campfire and we shoot the shit, you know?
Yeah.
Used to be, it was like battle all day long. You know, when we were younger, we had the energy for it. We could just keep going, you know, the party would never stop, but like,
yeah.
But like, we're more seasoned warriors now.
Yeah.
We leave
practical,
all that on the,
practical warriors.
We leave it on the battlefield, and then we go, we go chill around the fire after.
Yeah. That's great. So now you're no longer on tour. You guys just had a Kickstarter for your next album.
Yeah.
And fully funded. I'm excited for this.
Thank you.
When do you guys plan on getting all that really moving?
Well, I did the last Kickstarter for our last album, Patterns of the Static, that came out right after we did that tour.
Yeah.
And I did that Kickstarter without having a single song written. And it was like a really good kick in the pants. It was a really good creative experiment of like how to invite people into the writing process and how to figure out, like, I don't know what I want to write about and what techniques can I use to get to the place where I discover what the album's going to be. And it was just, there was no guarantees. It was scary and I liked it, so I did it again. So this record I haven't really written anything for. You know, I'm always writing lyrics and I'm always like putting like singing ideas into like my voice memos and stuff. But there's no concept of like what this album is or what it's going to sound like or what instruments I'm going to use to build it out initially. So that'll happen. I've given myself the holidays to not think about it. And then after that, January through basically June, for those, you know, I don't know, 6 months or so, I'll be writing. So, and then after that, it's going to be recording time and then hopefully release maybe at the end of the year or early next year. So,
oh, great.
Or the year after that, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not touring.
No.
You're taking a little break until, you know, through the holidays. You told me that you're getting into a lot of different internet communities through different hobbies.
Yeah.
You just started playing StarCraft 2.
Yeah. 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 So like while we were in lockdown, my wife's brother was like, "Hey man, StarCraft 2 is free." And I remember playing like StarCraft 1 Brood War, like the original back in like 1998 or whatever, when it first came out. And I was like, and he's like, we're playing. Why don't you play StarCraft with us? Like, that's something that we can do. You know, everybody was doing like Jackbox games or like Zoom hangouts or whatever, you know, people are playing Among Us or whatever, you know, like everyone's trying to like socialize without killing each other. So,
yeah.
I was like, okay, I'll play some StarCraft. I remember that game. I like real-time strategy games. And that'll be a social thing that we can do. And then, so I got into it and I started watching these tutorials on like how to like be really good on YouTube. And then I started like down the Twitch rabbit hole where I watch like pro gamers and streamers like stream their games. And then like, basically now I'm like every day I'm watching some StarCraft tournament, you know, and like the GSL, like the Korean players who are really good and, you know, the EU players. And so it's become this thing where like, I'm 37 years old now and I'm watching, I never understood why people would watch other people play games. Like my kids watch people play Minecraft and Roblox or whatever. And I'm like, what are you, just play the game. You guys, you can actually play it. Like, why are you watching someone else play it? And now I totally get it, because when someone's better than you, like really better than you, and it's something that's really hard. Now, maybe Roblox is hard for them. It's not a really hard game, but StarCraft 2 is the hardest game ever. And when someone's really good at it and their actions per minute, their APM is like over 300 or 400 actions per minute, and you can watch their hands move and their brain make decisions, it is really impressive to watch.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, how did they do that? Like, I'm sitting over here, like, I max out at 100 actions per minute, you know, and like my average probably is like, you know, 1 per second. And this guy's got, you know, 400, sometimes over 400 per minute. It's just boom, 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 you know. And so it's just, it's this weird thing where it's an infinite skill ceiling. And so, I don't know, that's taken up a lot of my free time and in the quarantine, but also just kind of lurking in Twitch and being more like understanding of the gaming culture is interesting. Like just kind of, like watching people and how they talk. And it's very different than Twitter and other cultures I'm a part of. And then being like, I feel like the old one and these are the kids. And then I like say something in chat and someone's like, yeah, I'm in my 30s too. I'm like, whoa, this is like broad range. This is not just kids, you know?
Yeah.
So it's fun to explore, you know, other communities.
Yeah. I remember when I was younger, I mean, probably 14 or 15, but getting into Halo and all those games.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm always maybe 6 months after it's like popular. Like I get in too late.
Yeah.
I'm too bad. Like I suck.
Yeah.
And it's too late for me to be worth anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you watch the other people play and you're like, oh my God, oh, now I'm learning how to do this.
Right.
But you'll never catch up to that.
You'll never catch up to them. But like, yeah, that's the thing about StarCraft too, is like you start at bronze level on the ladder if you want to do 1v1s on the ladder and you try to climb this ladder. So bronze, silver, gold, platinum, diamond, masters. Grandmasters is top 200 in the region. Like, so North America is a region. So if you're a GM, which I play with a GM, he's like top 200 in the whole North America. And then there's like pro is like one level beyond. They're like sponsored and they make tournaments and they make money. But like I was sitting for like months in like the bronze and silver level. And then I finally went on YouTube and watched this guy, this streamer's Bronze to GM, Bronze to Grandmaster video series where he takes every race in StarCraft from bronze level to grandmaster level and he shows you how to do it. And even with that, like even with all the information, the mechanics are so hard if you don't practice it. Like I still only got to like platinum level. I could never
get it
because the mechanics are so hard. And getting your actions up are, it's just a young man's game, but it's still fun to play with friends and, you know, and just kill stuff. It's just fun to blow stuff up and, you know.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, I was always into the first person shooter games growing up, but it was always because I had other friends that always played it.
Yep.
I was always the worst at it. And like you said, it's weird thinking that you're going to be watching a Twitch stream or whatever. And I always thought that, why would anyone watch this? And then I actually used to work for Call of Duty and I worked on their esports. So I actually had to watch all of the esports stuff. And then it was just like, oh my God, I understand why people watch this stuff because I will never be that good at Call of Duty.
Sure.
But it's interesting to see how good people can be. And you can also learn from them as well. But
it's sports. I mean, it's esports for a reason. It's like, yes, you and I can go have a pickup game of football where we play football, but it's not going to be pretty. If you play football,
nope.
But we, you know, it'd be much better if we sat down, we watched the professionals play the game. It'd be
sure.
It would just look and feel better than that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I kind of see it as. It's like, yeah, you can play the game, but like you can't play it like that. And something mm-hmm. when you see people playing at a high level, there's something really appealing about that.
Yeah, luckily the only game I really play that I'm good at is Star Wars Battlefront. Star Wars Battlefront, the original two, and then the remake of one and two. There, I'm like, okay, I'm in the top five every time. I'm okay with that because I started with that game the second it came out and my old setup at work. I think I had a 50-inch 4K TV while working on Call of Duty playing Star Wars Battlefront 1 every day. So that one, I'll hop on Twitch through Have a Drink With Me, and it's basically like every time I die, I'll drink.
Nice.
Which is still a lot, but it makes it even more fun because I get to talk about the show, play Star Wars, my favorite thing. But yeah, I can't do the Call of Duty. I'll play with my brother every once in a while. He and all of his friends have a clan and all that. But other than that, I have to stick to just storyline games because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Dying every 2 seconds.
Yeah, fast Twitch is hard to have that. Be the thing that keeps you alive is your speed.
Yep. Yeah. It's nuts. Cause you look, you know, watching other players play, you're like, oh yeah, I could have done that. But then it's just, they're like 5 seconds quicker than I'll ever be.
Decision-making is so fast and knowing what to do and having gone down like, oh, I've seen this before, especially with the StarCraft, it's like every little move makes like a butterfly effect of possibilities. And so if your opponent, you scout your opponent doing something, you have to counter some way. And the more times you've seen them do that, you counter, but then there's this meta game happening where like they could be faking at a higher level. It's like they could be faking like they're going to this technology that produces this units, but they actually don't. They cancel it after you scout it and they switch to these units because they know you're going to counter with those units and these units hard counter those units, you know, it's this crazy chess match, really.
It's real-time strategy.
It's all real time. It's all real time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so nerdy. And I never thought, you know, after years of like, playing all the first person shooters and the Halos and I started on like Quake and on
computer. Quake and Doom back.
Doom in the 90s. I played Wolfenstein. Like I was big into games, but like, you know, and then on the road, our bass player was friends with a lot of the MLG like Halo players. And so they would come out to shows and stuff. And sometimes we like go to their house and stuff. And it was like right when Major League Gaming was like infant, like tiny, you know, and they would like, you know, jam to our songs and like share them to with people and stuff. And we're like, this is rad. Like, this is close to the birth of an industry. And we're like, we're witnessing it. And now, of course, it's like, you know, bigger than any other industry ever.
Oh, yeah. It's massive. The payouts are nuts.
Yeah. I get the appeal, man. I get it.
With StarCraft, do you run into a lot of people being like, you know, I'm going to fuck your mom? Like, you know how it was back playing first person shooters? Yep. You're like, I'm fucking your mom.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, she's downstairs and I can hear her. Yeah.
Actually, you are.
You're not doing that.
You aren't doing that right now.
Well,
no. So the thing about StarCraft, and maybe it's kind of like a double-edged sword, it's not that social. Like when you are on the ladder and you're playing somebody, you can play a 1v1, a 2v2, a 3v3, or a 4v4. But if you just queue, if you just get on the ladder and just go, you don't know who you're getting. And so you don't actually have them in your headphones.
And great.
If they, because the algorithm will match you up with someone who's similarly skilled as you at matchmaking ranking. And so they can type stuff, but every time they type, they're stealing from their APM, their actions per minute, to type something to you in game.
So they're losing.
They're losing more and more of their time. Like they could be building stuff. Yeah. And so sometimes, if people get chatty, I just let them talk because I'm like, whatever, I'll just macro behind this. And
You know,
so it's not that toxic. I mean, if you hang out in the chat rooms, I assume it is. But
I'm sure that's a dark place.
Yeah, Twitch chat can get toxic, but then you know, people on Twitch seem to just ban really quickly. They just ban you immediately, and mods ban you, and so they kind of self-police, and it's kind of this, I don't know, libertarian dream world over there. If you're a troll, you're gone. So,
I got to the point where I just had to embrace how terrible online, you know, 12-year-old kids saying that they're, you know, fucking my mom or that they're my dad or whatever.
Sure.
You just have to embrace it at that point. And it's just like, I'm not good enough to rebuttal this child.
Yeah.
Who's talking shit about my mom. I just have to be like,
yeah,
you know what? I hope you make her happy.
Yeah.
And I hope
and poor kid.
Yeah.
Poor kid. Like what happened to him to make him, you know, get on there and say things like that.
Yeah.
You know, like who did that to him for real, in real life to where he had talk about doing it to other people because he's mad. So
That started somewhere for sure.
Yeah. That kind of anger. And you know, who knows? Trolls, sometimes they just, you know, like I've been there when I was younger, you know, like you just want attention, or you want to be validated, or you just want to stir something. You just want to, you know,
fuck somebody's mom. Yeah.
Yeah. You just want to destroy something beautiful, you know, like Fight Club mine, right? You just want to mess up something sacred. You know, I get it. I get the vibe.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed the Battlefront community because I've joined them all the groups on Facebook and stuff, and everyone's kind of the same way where it's just like, hey, that was a great, you know, kill spree you had.
Yeah.
And no one's ever just like, you know, fuck you, right? I'm gonna kill you, like you're a bitch.
Yeah.
It's everyone's just like, that was fun. We had a lot of fun playing this.
Yeah.
And I did a very good job. And that's what I've seen. And so with Facebook communities or in groups, are you part of anything for gaming or anything else?
I used to be kind of more on Facebook. I'm not so much anymore just because of time, you know. Twitter seems to be a faster thing as far as just keeping up with stuff. But like, yeah, I'm into like cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and stuff like that. So I have a whole scene of people that I follow who are either shit posters or actual thought leaders or actual educated folks. A lot of people come to that with a lot of different ideas about the benefit of blockchain technology or whatever. And so like you get the people who are more political, and you get the people who are more financial, and you get the people who are just like, let's revolutionary, like tear the system down. So, and then you just get this crazy meme culture of people who are like, I don't know, uber just don't tread on me memers.
Shit posters.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's just this weird blend of people, and it's interesting to see them all interact. And yeah, like I'm like barely dip my toes in it, you know, but like,
yeah,
but I get to explore, I get to lurk, you know, I get to just sit around and like follow people and be like, oh, what's he saying?
Yeah.
And they don't know who I am, and I don't know who they, you know, like I comment on their stuff and they're like, they don't, you know, think anything of it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting.
So if you reach out with any questions, are people genuinely helpful, or are they more just like, I'm going to fuck your mom?
Depends on who.
Yeah.
It depends on who. Like if it's a shit poster, they probably want to say something snarky, which yeah. is fine. Cause then you like, they post snark and you post some snark, and then, or, you know, you just try to meme. It's just a bunch of memeing, you know, you just try to joke on top, layer a joke on top of a joke. Or,
yeah.
You know, and that's Twitter. That's more just platform. You know,
yeah.
Twitter's for jokes and liars. That's it.
Yep.
So that's kind of where I just follow some random people, and just kind of, I don't know, dip my toe in the water. But yeah, it's interesting how vast the internet is and how siloed it all is. Like, we thought it was going to bring us all together, but there are some silos, man.
Oh yes.
Like, I bet in 100 years, the English language, like it'll be like before, where you travel like 200 miles and they had a completely different accent than you. It'll be like mm-hmm. that, but on the internet, where like they have all different memes, all different ways of like shortening the language, and they develop their own languages and they can talk.
Yeah.
And can't even understand what they're saying. Cause I feel like that now, like in Twitch chat or on, you know, on a Telegram for a shitcoin, a cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. how they're talking is very hard unless you've been taught that language. Like, to know yeah. what they're saying and the way, the terms of speech and everything. It's definitely like, I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy to yeah. see.
And you have 2 kids, correct?
I have 3.
You have 3 kids. Yeah, okay. We... I have 7 nieces and nephews.
Oh God. I thought you were going to say kids. I was going to say, no. What is wrong with you?
No, I'm trying. I'm trying my hardest. Hopefully my wife doesn't listen to this, but I have 7 nieces and nephews, and I'm worried that I'm going to hit the point where they're speaking a completely different language that I don't understand, whether it be through memes or TikTok or whatever. And I'm not going to be able to keep up with it. And then right. I'm going to hit that point where I'm that old guy
yeah.
who doesn't get it, because you and I have both been in this position where it's like, oh
yeah,
those older people, they don't get it. And it's so hard to keep up with shit.
We had the first MySpace accounts. Like, we were there. We were like cutting edge. We were like, this is social media. Like the
we were friends with Tom.
Yeah, we were friends with Tom. He was in our top 8. Like, we, yeah. you know, like we like that. But and now it's specifically, I think, for our generation of like kind of older millennials, it is yep. scary to think about the fact that like we could be like our parents, because the boomers had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when they moved in on Facebook, it was like they are like fish out of water. Like, they just are posting the randomest stuff and like don't
play slots. Yeah,
they don't get the content at all, and they're just like playing farm. They like get into Farmville and they're just like asking all their friends to like help them on farm. But it was pathetic, really. And we don't want to be those people. We have that specific yeah. fear of that memory of like the boomers coming online to the social media and being like way behind because of how yeah. things moved. We don't want to be those people. So I think part of me just exploring these communities is kind of like a little bit out of fear. It's curiosity, yeah. but it's also like, where's the
world? It's research for the rest of your life.
It's where's the world going? And also
yeah.
because I got on Facebook early, because I got on, you know, these new technologies early, it really helped my career and my band. Cause I was like, yeah. oh, here, now we can bypass the middleman or the magazines, and we can just broadcast mm-hmm. directly to the fans, and we can have yep. a relationship that's like two way, like they can say stuff back and we can say stuff to them. And that was super novel and really, really helped our ability to like maintain an independent career, like crowdfunding our albums. Like, we couldn't have done that without Facebook.
Yeah.
We couldn't have done it without social media. And so like, I'm always kind of on the lookout for the next thing that's going to help me continue making music, because that's really all I want to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah, really the only reason that I have any social media at all is because Have a Drink With Me is my baby, and social media has been very good to me through that show. But if I get rid of Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, there goes all of my advertising.
Oh sure, yeah.
See, so at this yeah. for anything, any personally owned business, you know, whether it be a band or a podcast, you have to deal with all this stuff, and you have to be updated with everything that's constantly going on,
right,
in order for it to thrive, before you have to start paying people hundreds of thousands of dollars, or hundreds of dollars in my case, to promote your stuff.
Right.
You have to really grassroots it through all of these ridiculous communities.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so hard to know, like, we're in this the baby phase of it all. Like, we don't know how this is going to shake out. And so you kind of have to be on alert for like where it's going, because it is moving very fast. It's like, okay, this could be the future, that could be the future. And now things like Facebook and Twitter, which were so revolutionary, now those kind of look dated. It's like, oh, really? Like 200 characters? Or, oh, really? Like, we're going to go like make a scrapbook of our lives online? Like, all these things seem really kind of like clunky and vintage now. And so, you know, you go over on Twitch and you're like, wow, this is way more like real time interaction, not a broadcast network where you post and someone comments. It's like right away, like when I stream on Twitch, it's like I read the chat and I talk to them and they say something, and then jokes develop that way. And, you know, like, it's way more interactive. And then what I'm finding is like people really actually like to see you do nothing. Like, they just like to see, like, all the Twitch streamers I watch, they eat on stream. Like, they don't take a break. They like are like, oh, my burrito's here, and they just like eat on stream, like and I'm like, and then there's like 400 people watching them. I'm like, 400 people watching you eat? Like, I never thought this was what they called content, you know?
Oh yeah, it's like reaction videos. I don't understand the appeal of reaction videos. Right. You are watching a person react to a video that you yourself should be reacting to.
It's hacked the social mammal in our brains.
Yeah,
the monkey brain is totally hacked by that. It's like, oh, other people are laughing. I can now see it's funny.
Yeah. I need to see how I'm supposed to react to something. Right. So I need to watch someone react. And then we're going to get reaction videos of people reacting to people reacting to videos.
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane.
It's just act our biology for sure.
I do want to say something about the Facebook scrapbook thing. Like, oh, you know, you've been friends for 2 years, whatever. I'm going to do a little humble brag here. But
you guys,
not sure if you run the Classic Crime social media. This son of a bitch had Classic Crime as my number one band that I listened to in 2020.
Nice.
And Water's Edge was my number one streamed song this year.
Wow. What makes that song the song for you?
It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
That's number one. So one thing that was massive for me getting into Patterns in the Static was I stood in line for 3 hours and 18 minutes to vote for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, me too.
Back in March, maybe a couple days after the album released.
Yep.
And I had the whole album on loop while I sat stood in line, because why not?
Right.
And Water's Edge, The Outside, really stuck out for me. Huh. So I started putting those in different playlists of new music that I listen to. Or so I also write, you know, I've got some screenplays and some TV pilots and stuff, but I always create a playlist of what I want to be listening to while writing, like something that gets me in the mood of the feel of the script. And I always have a Classic Crime song in there, whether it's, you know, Seattle or Glass Houses, whatever. I always have that. I have a Classic Crime always. So I wasn't surprised to see that Classic Crime or Water's Edge were at the top of my my list. But you guys re-Instagrammed it.
Yes. Yeah. So every year I do that. So like, instead of like doing the, everyone's always doing the Spotify Wrapped, whatever, at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, in years past, we used to like go in and take photos of it and build a story of our own thing. But this year I was just like, I just got, you know, I opened our Instagram and it was just like, you know, 100 of these things. So I just went through, liked as many as I could and posted as many as I could to our stories, you know, and anybody that had us as number one, I was like, yeah, we'll make sure that makes the story.
That's this damn show.
Nice.
Amazing album. I mean, I listened to it before we hopped on this call, because it's part of my daily rotation. Before I Woke Up is the new song in my quote unquote screenplay soundtrack for this new thing I'm writing.
You can actually listen to lyrics while you're writing?
Hell yeah.
I can't do that at all.
One thing that I've always done, so I've been writing for 6 years. What year are we in? 6 years now, 6 or 7 years. What I like to do is I also am a web developer, graphic designer, illustrator. So I get a playlist of songs that really make me focus. And I'll have maybe 10 songs on a loop. And I think it tricks my brain into thinking that I haven't spent much time on this activity because I hear the same songs over and over,
right?
Which makes me not really want to take a break. Obviously, I'll pee and eat and drink, but I get focused. So I think I hear songs so many times that I already know what they're saying. And it's just already in my head.
Right.
So while I'm writing, it's not that big of a deal. Like I can listen to podcasts while developing a website. So that's full keyboard coding while also listening to, you know, Rainn Wilson tell me about how he's the bassoon king, whatever.
Right.
So I can somehow listen to music, listen to lyrics while doing something that's involving me actually typing stuff out. I mean, there's multiple times where I'll stop and I'll be like, yeah, get it, Matt.
Yeah.
and then I'll come back to it. Or
you have good transitioning skills.
Yes, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Good transitioning skills.
Yeah.
Classic crime. 2 years in a row, my number one Spotify rap.
Awesome. Well, that's good. No, that's the number that I was actually most happy about seeing. Like, I don't care how many minutes someone listens to us, like, your record was streamed X amount of times or whatever. It was the amount of people who had us as their number one. And you know what they always say is like, you need 1,000 true fans and you're golden or whatever. Well, we had 1,700 people who had us as their number one this last year. And I was like, that's amazing.
What do I win for being,
one of the 1,700?
Yeah.
Warm.
I get to interview you, I guess.
Warm feeling. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about it is that with such like we're not a big band. That's the beautiful thing about the internet being so vast and often siloed is that these little communities can pop up and be self-sustaining. Like, like the people who like the music I make is a tiny, tiny community, and we're never gonna like sweep the globe, and like you know, and be this like mega thing. Because it's just not built. It's not built for that. It's not built for mass consumption. But the fact that it can continue in this small community where it slowly invites some more people in, you know, by word of mouth or whatever. But the music itself is being made and supported by this small group of people. That's the thing that's like the coolest thing about technology, I think. You know, just allowing that to happen.
Yeah. So I've only seen you guys live this one time that Dan Doby and I went, and it was a little interesting because I mean I've listened to you guys since 2011. Right when I moved to Los Angeles, I started listening to Classic Crime, and you guys popped up on Pandora, and it was the acoustic album, and I was listening to it, and I was like, I fucking love this. And I had it on repeat over and over and over.
Nice.
And I always talked about the Classic Crime. I sound like a little fangirl. And you know what? If you want to sign my tits, you can.
You can be a fanboy if you want to. Whatever you want.
And I always told people, Classic Crime, one of my favorite bands. And I never knew another fan of the Classic Crime. Not saying you don't have any fans, but but then finally I got to see you guys live and I was like, these are my people.
Yeah.
This is amazing because you guys had an amazing turnout in Anaheim and everyone was just, I love seeing a band live and realizing I haven't seen them live enough because the audience knows when to do like a certain shout or a certain cheer or a clap or a woo.
Yeah.
And like hearing that, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. What a great community to be in of like this band that I love, I'm with a bunch of people who also love it to the point where they know when they're supposed to shout during a live show.
Yeah. Back to social mammal. It's like, we all kind of agree on something and there's like there's a glue that kind of holds us all together. Like we all think this is good or we all like this in some way. And so like, we can all kind of get along around that, that can unify the community. So that's the same thing on Twitch. Like when we stream on Twitch, it's like in the chat, it's a group of people who are tuning in because they care about the same music. And music is like a big, it's a big part of people's lives. It's a big part of my life. You know, yeah. Someone likes the same music I like. I have a lot in common with them often, you know?
Yeah.
We can hang out for sure.
Yeah. I don't think I've gone a day in my life since I was 15 without hearing a song every single day, without listening to music every single day. 100%. I've listened to a song at least once every day. And I don't know many people like that. I know people who just love music, but I'm like, on my lunch break, I'm ready to hop in my car so I can get my playlist going.
Wow.
I don't care what I'm doing. Today was going to buy scotch
nice.
For this episode, but before I even start my car, I start my car first. Obviously, that's the first thing you do. Then you put your seatbelt on. That's the second thing you do.
Right.
But then, you know, immediately put Spotify on and I'm like, okay, my playlist, let's do this. And I don't know too many people that are that anal about.
You curate your own playlist.
This is my moment.
You don't let them recommend it. Like, you kind of get recommended and then you add it to your own playlist. Is that how it works?
So I've been basically just a Spotify boy. I think that's what they would call me.
Sure.
Since 2015.
Spot a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll spot a guy or two. Yeah. And they do like a every Monday new music playlist.
Right.
Based on what I listen to.
Okay.
And I found amazing music through that. I still listen to a lot of what I listened to back in like 2001, 2002. Like when I first really got into the music that I love. And that always goes on repeat. But I don't find enough music that's new that I really like. Like I can't turn on the radio and be like,
right.
This is a song I'm going to listen to.
Right.
It's always, you know. It's something like I listened to. Let's just dive back into classic crime here. I listened to Glass Houses every day, probably for like, I don't know, 6 months.
Wow.
Just because if I find a song that I just genuinely love, and what I love, my favorite part of loving music is when a song builds up.
Right.
And you don't have the chorus just repeated three times, the same recording three times.
Right.
You get a little buildup. Precipice is a better example. You know, I wish I could play the violin. Then the violin comes in. Play piano well. Piano comes in.
Right.
And then it all builds up into this big thing.
Yeah.
So that's music that I'm really drawn to.
I guess that I understand that you might be drawn to that because that is more narrative songwriting as opposed to like, I mean, all stories have structures and all that, but like there's a dynamic to a story that, mm-hmm. and that has an arc.
Yeah.
And I think a good song, I mean, every song, even the pop songs that you might not like, they do have a verse, a chorus, and a bridge. At least they have three parts.
Yeah.
You know, and the bridge is when something profound and different is often discovered or reiterated or whatever. You know, when I do songwriting workshops, it's always about like, you know, the verse is like the specific, the chorus is the general point of the song, and then the bridge is like the turning point.
Yeah.
You know, or the doubling down or reiterating or reminding or whatever. And so there is a narrative. I guess I come from a school of songwriting that is more narrative, and I imagine if you are a person who writes stories, that could be probably the type of music that's more appealing to you, because other music that's just like, yeah, baby, yeah, doobie, yeah, dance,
yeah, wet ass pussy,
yeah, might not be like the kind of the arc you're looking for, or the dynamic you're looking for.
Yeah, I understand people like getting caught in like a beat, and it's like, oh, this is a good beat, or this is very catchy. But to me, it really is that story building in story building, even just instrumental. Of yeah. Where it's like, oh, hey, the drums are playing now. Like, hey, do you not realize drums are going now?
Layers and layers.
And that's apparently this episode is just about your music and how much I love it.
Well, thank you. But that's great.
That's, you know, that's how I am with, you know, with your music is it's, it builds and builds and builds. And I'm getting excited. And every time I hear it, I get excited because it's like, oh, this is the moment where I find out Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
Right.
It's that. It's not, oh, I'm hearing about a wet ass pussy again. and nothing against that. I mean, if people love that song,
sure, sure.
People are going to love whatever music they love, but
listeners are either lyrical or musical often. I mean, I listen to both, but because I write both, but mostly the lyric is the main thing that matters to me. Like the production does not matter as much as the lyric. It's delivery, the melody, and the actual like poetry of the words. Like that's all I'm listening for. And a lot of people who don't listen for that, they're thinking BPM, rhythm, you know, like melody, like you could just, it doesn't even have to be sung, like just sing it passionately. It doesn't even have to be lyrical at all. It could be like not even words and they're happy, you know. But I find this like one, people fall on one or two of those.
Yeah, I follow, I would say both equally. Like some of your songs, I wait for that, the moment of the lyrics.
Right.
So like headlights, I wait for that last like chorus bit. And it's like, yes, I fucking got it. not saying I sit through the song and I fucking hate it until then. But it's like, ooh, once this hits, it's gonna be so good.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
payoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. I like the build up with the big payoff. That's what brings me into a lot of like music. I'm a emo kid from early 2000s. You know, I was brought into Brand New and Taking Back Sunday and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that
too.
The Used, and they always had that big buildup, and then the final chorus is just boom, fully emotional, and just that's the payoff you get listening to the song. It's not the same. I don't know what song that was that I was singing, but you get it.
Yep. No, I totally get it. Yeah. That's the school that we're from too. It's like dynamics, contrast, you know, quiet verse, big chorus, and then just like, you know, go huge in the bridge or whatever. And it wasn't metal music or like extremely like abrasive or anything. It was just like soaring melodies and trying to like hit a power chorus, is, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause you guys have changed. I want to say drastically, but drastically also sounds like a very drastic word.
Yeah. It's not that,
you know, from your first album, it was a lot harder. And then you guys move into a more melodic, tone, and then
the things that you were saying that you liked were this contrasting of, or the build up and the payoff, which is, you can think of songs in those terms, and if you think of them in only those terms, it's actually easy to just write that song 100 times, be like, okay, here's the breakdown, and then here's the drop or whatever, and here's where it kicks in, and here's where it pays off, and like you think in those mechanical sort of like, I don't know, transactional terms. And then you hear songs like by bands like Arcade Fire or The National, and you're like, wow, that's way more subtle. And they don't have a massive payoff, but there's something so satisfying about like this part or that part. And like, how do they do that without the dynamic, without the big drop? Or how, like, what kind of palette are they painting with where they don't even need that for the payoff? Mm-hmm. The payoff's coming, but they don't need that basic, like the thing that the tools we've been using the whole time to do it. And so you try to incorporate that into your style. And that's at least what I've done, is like over the years, I listen to things that are more subtle and nuanced. And I try to think about how I can, you know, use that to make a more, you know, nuanced and subtle song.
Yeah. Well, you've been doing a great job.
Thanks,
man. The community here says you've been doing a great job.
Well, that's great.
So another community, we've talked about music community. We've talked about online gaming community, Twitch a little bit. You've also gotten into powerlifting, you said. Is there a community with that you follow?
No, I don't. I don't think there will be either. I just have a friend who lives nearby who in the pandemic started, like basically built his own home gym off of like out of like scrap stuff. Like he would just you know, different plates and bars, and he like make it all work so that it, you know, he built his own bench and everything. And and he was like, hey, do you want to work out? And I was like, you know what, I actually do need to. I'm not good at it and I don't know what I'm doing, but like, sure, I'll come over. And so he just started texting me. He's like, hey man, bench today at 5:30 or whatever. And I'd be like, just show up. And he would just tell, he's like, all right, let's see where you're at and let's look at your form and let's see what's going on. And he just put weight on the bar and just basically coach me for free. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, if this guy is an asset, like I'm not paying him, and you know, he's friendly and he's taking care of me. So I just started hanging out with him more and more, like 3-4 times a week. And now I think I kind of understand it. Like I understand why people work out and they're addicted to it. Like it feels good. Like when my muscles are sore and I can feel them and I'm like, whoo, I like that. It's a good feeling.
Yeah.
You know? So I've been doing that. I don't know about the community aspect. Like I'm not going to like watch the competitions, you know, watch guys lift and stuff. Cause I'm not really even about being big or like caring about, I just like feeling good, you know?
Oh yeah. I don't know. It's very interesting to me because I did pro wrestling. I trained to be a pro wrestler for 9 months and I loved it. Same thing, you know, you get thrown on your back and then the next day you're all in pain and
right.
But it's good. You know, you hurt, but you realize your body is like, hey, you're doing something about this.
Yeah.
Like it's a good pain. Yeah. You know that you're going into the steps to make your muscles stronger. Your, you know, everything, right. Your mentality, your brain, everything stronger. I had to quit because I got in a car accident. But in the pro wrestling community for the place that I trained is amazing. A lot of support, everyone very, very much like backing you. That's a community powerlifting and just, you know, strength training, that kind of stuff. I don't think there's a big community for that. And I think there should be where it really is like you're, you know, the guy you're working out with, there needs to be more people being like, hey, let's do this together.
Yeah.
Let's do a challenge. Let's do 100 pushups today. I don't feel like there's a community like that.
You'd be surprised, man. There is he's really into it. Like he has got he's always mentioning guys' names that I've never heard of. Like you should see this guy lift. Like he's so strong. Like he does this, he does that. Like you can pull up YouTube videos of these guys breaking world records, you know, in the basic like bench, deadlift, squat, you know, power clean or power, you know, clean and jerk or whatever. But like deadlift is like the ultimate for power lifters. And so like guys that can deadlift a lot are kind of like, they're seen as like the strongest men on earth, you know?
Yeah.
Which is funny, but they have competitions where like anybody can sign up and, you know, try to place high in their weight and age division or whatever. And there's people that work out and diet and go hard, you know, for like as a hobby, like they don't get paid for it.
Yeah.
Just to show up to these competitions locally and like, you know, deadlift 650 pounds, you know, try to win it.
Yeah. I want to find like a Reddit community where it's like, if you don't do 100 pushups today, I'm going to fuck your mom. Like, I need that kind of motivation. I need a video game community mentality to force me to work out.
I love that. The theme of this show is just people threatening to fuck your mom or claiming they have fuck your mom.
Yeah. And I need someone to genuinely just be like, Dylan, do your 1000 or your 1000 steps, do your pushups. I'm your new dad.
I have your mom here. Literally.
Yeah. If you don't finish your 20 minutes of yoga today, I'm going to send you an email you're going to regret.
Threats are a thing and those are motivation, but I honestly feel like going back to the other theme, other than fuck your mom, I guess, of like social mammal and social mimicry, like just having somebody else interested in it and texting you about it and doing it with you, that is like a accountability in a way where like you will do it. Like I did not feel like working out. And then he would be like, hey, you good today at like 5:30? And I'd be like, oh, well, I can't say no to him, you know, like he needs a spotter.
Mm-hmm. He will die if you don't help him. Yeah.
He's really strong. He doesn't need me at all. But like part of me is like, I have an obligation, you know?
Yeah. Like, he's going to get weaker if you don't show up.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, like he's reaching like just socially, like he's reaching out to me and like, you know, we both have families and it's like, it's really hard to like reach out to somebody, another man who has a family and like do something. So you just feel more obligated. And so when you get people like, you know, fuck your mom might work. But what I'm saying is like just getting people committed and just kind of saying, hey, we're going to get better at this together. And then having them text each other and be like, hey, today, let's do this thing. Like, that's motivation, you know?
I feel like the internet should be that way with most communities. Like, look, you want to be better at something? Okay, you're shitty at Call of Duty, but hey, just so you know, check this out. This is what I did. It's gonna make you a little bit better.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the one thing that I like about StarCraft 2 is that if you don't like losing, you're never gonna get better. And so there is this teacher mentality of like the people who were pro who didn't want to fight at that level anymore. So they like turned around and there was like, hey, I'm gonna do a stream and I'm gonna tell you how to lose with dignity and respect and focus on just one part of your game. And even if you lose, if you do that one part well, it'll be a win, you know. Like they're like really being like the wise teachers of like how to improve at a game. And granted, it doesn't mean anything, but like just mastery of anything is such a self-esteem booster. And you've got nothing going on and the world is locked down and you're the type of person that needs to master something really difficult. You can take up carpentry, you could take up basket weaving, or you can take up StarCraft 2. I'm just saying, StarCraft 2, it's free, download it. It's the best game in the world.
And Matt and I are going to motivate you through the whole thing.
Yeah, we're going to tell you. I'll tell you the people to follow. Yeah, watch Vibes Bronze to GM on YouTube. He does a really good series every year where he takes all the three races in StarCraft from bronze level to grandmaster level. And he shows you how to do it with very little skill at the beginning. And then you add skills along the way that make you a better player. And just that mastery just getting better at something. It's just such a good feeling.
Yeah. And if you're trying to build a bench, check out Bob Vila, Home Again with Bob Vila. He's a good motivator. He's going to help you through this. Wait. Not sure if he's on YouTube, but
would be though.
He should be. Well, shit.
Well, shit.
Matt, we are at the end of this episode, which I hate, but Classic Crime, where can we find your music on social media?
TheClassicCrime.com or at TheClassicCrime on Twitter, Instagram. I think Facebook, we had to make it The Classic Crimes because their algorithm said that The Classic Crime, when we had that, it violated their terms of service.
That makes sense.
So we took the S, we added the S, and then now it doesn't violate their terms of service. And you can't appeal or argue with an algorithm. They don't have that capability. So now we're just The Classic Crimes at Facebook. But yeah, you don't need to know any of that. Just Google us.
Yeah, don't fight robots here. Also, I want, where can we find Vocal Few?
VocalFew.com or same as Classic Crime. Just type it into your Google search bar. We've got like 5 EPs that are more like acoustic and folk poppy. And then for the rock stuff, The Classic Crime.
And then where can we find you on social media?
I'm at Matt McDonald Is on Twitter and Instagram. That's basically it for now. Or you can follow The Classic Matt on Twitch. I'm streaming songwriting sessions from this room that you see me in right now. Coming up in January, I'll be trying to write a bunch of songs here. So on Twitch.
Perfect. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. For our listeners, subscribe to Have a Drink with Me on any podcast fucking thing. Apple, Spotify, Google, we're everywhere. Follow us on social media at HADWM and check out our store, shop.hadwm.com. Thank you for listening.